word of mouth by John Ronald Reuel Tolkien.
Nice.
He gave WBAI the right to do this.
Nice.
Through Baird Searles.
Nice.
Through the aforementioned Baird Searles.
Nice.
And this is what people are going to be hearing if they pitch.
So that's one of the coolest things I've ever heard about WBAI.
That's actually, yeah, wow. I would agree.
Baird had produced like songs and poems of Middle Earth with his husband, or well, not husband, because in the 60s they weren't married, but his partner, Martin Last, who was another BAI staff member. And they did a certain amount of, is that the Bilbo scene?
It's the Blunt the Knives.
Yeah, no, let's just listen to this and I'll finish the story after.
Bilbo Baggins hates. Cut the cloth, tread on the fat, leave the bones on the bedroom mat, pour the milk on the pantry floor. Splash the wine on every door, dump the crocks in a boiling bowl, pound them up with a thumping pole. When you're finished, if they are whole, send them down the hall to roll.
Okay, so we're going to continue. We're just going to let the Hobbit run in the background. So let me just finish the story briefly.
No, go on, finish the story.
Baird Searles had been in touch with Tolkien, and we're producing this thing. When I say we, the producers were David Marks, who was a mainstay, sort of same kind of a job as you've got. He did some freeform radio, but he was an engineer and a traffic guy, making sure that the station ran.
Yeah.
But ran.
Yeah.
And so there's Dave Marks and Margot Adler, who created a show called Our
Show
some time back, and myself, and the three of us were co-producers, and Baird Searles was the voice. And he had the voice, but it was Searles who had said, why don't we just do, something from Tolkien? And it's like, how can we get the rights? And he said, oh, don't worry about that. And, we have them. We have them. I spoke to the professor.
Wow.
It's like, okay. So at one point,
that
by the way, we're doing the reading. And he's at a point and he says, and he gets to the point with the wizard. And he said, okay, we need the pronunciation on Gandalf. It's not Gandalf. What is it? I don't know. We talk about it, and so he gives me a phone number. So I go into a production booth. This is at 62nd Street, our church. And I go into a production booth, and I dial the phone number, and yes, hello. I need to find out about a pronunciation on Lord of the Rings. He says, yes, I get that a lot. Who am I talking to? This is Professor Tolkien.
Hey.
I did not. Only at the end of this conversation did I hit the record button in the production booth. I'm freaking out. I'm on the phone with Tolkien, right? You know, and this is, I'm 19 years old. And so, and I said, yes, how do you pronounce G-A-N? D-A-L-F. And he says, Gandalf.
Gandalf.
I said, Gandalf? He says, yes. Like half. Like, you know, half a sixpence. But, you know, he said, like, so it's not Gandalf, but it's also his accent was so thick that, you know, well, we ended up going with Gandalf.
Gandalf.
And yes, the F is supposed to be a little
Gandalf.
Yeah, Gandalf. It's actually, funny. Yeah, because it's Germanic in nature, so the F is closer to a V.
Gandalf.
And
Gandalf.
And by the way, Gandalf. The big part that Baird, I mean, you will hear Orcish in this, because what we're going to be hearing, let me also just explain why people are going to pledge to hear this damn thing. This is the Council of Elrond. In the movie The Lord of the Rings, it lasts 3 minutes. Over WBAI, it lasts 100.
Uh-huh.
For such a long movie, what they do is they, in the Council of Elrond, everybody has been on an adventure. Book one. Now, for those people who are unaware, as far as Tolkien was concerned, he wrote one book, or rather one, I don't know what the overall thing is, five books and two or three appendices make up The Lord of the Rings. It's not a trilogy. Never thought of it as a trilogy. Mm. But it is. There is book one, book two, book three, and each book has a chapter. So in The Fellowship of the Ring, book two, chapter two, is the Council of Elrond. And at this point, Frodo goes to Rivendell, meets up with Bilbo, meets up with Gandalf. He gets there with Merry and Pippin, and of course Samwise is always with him. And he is carrying in an envelope the ring. They have escaped the riders, they've gone through things, and each person were introduced to all of the characters of The Lord of the Rings for the first time. Mm. And we hear each of their adventures, a lot of which are told in flashback in the Council of Elrond. So what Jackson did on the movie was he took those adventures and he put them chronological in real time, so that here's Gandalf being held captive by Saruman, and that whole story plays out in an early part of the movie. In the Council of Elrond, we hear that story. We hear the story of the eagle. We hear how Boromir came down from the north. We are introduced to, we have already met Strider, but only now do we find out that Strider is Aragorn, the king, who will be the return of the king. And so we get each of their stories one by one. In other words, the Council of Elrond, where they will determine what to do with the ring, is self-contained. You don't have to have read The Hobbit, although it helps. You don't have to know anything about Lord of the Rings before you do the Council of Elrond. It's self-contained. And it is in that chapter that they decide what will happen to the ring and who is going to do it and what the company, that is the people, the fellowship, are going to consist of. And that is what we are going to hear with all voices done by Baird Searles.
Ooh, that sounds good.
And the special effects on the WBAI production, as authorized by John Ronald Reuel Tolkien, are far superior to that of Peter Jackson's. There's no question. All you have to do is close your eyes and say, Rivendell.
Nice.
Yeah.
I get it.
Try to beat that, Weta or Industrial Light and Magic or anything like that. That's it's right. The mind's eye.
There you go.
It's the mind's eye.
The infinite creativity of the mind.
And by the way, let me entreat listeners, before you go to see the movie The Hobbit, whether you see it in 48 FPS, that's the big thing about this movie, for those who don't know. It's film. You can see it. Films are projected at 24 frames per second.
Mm-hmm.
The Hobbit is 48. It's the first film ever. First feature film ever at 48 frames per second. It is hyper realistic. People have been, that's why I said brown bag. People have been reported getting sick to their stomach in the first half hour of The Hobbit because Jackson's camera moves. People are familiar with his style.
Right.
Even in this King Kong, the camera sways in and out. Now add that to this 3D. Hyper-realistic, 48 frames per second. I don't know if I want to see it in 3D, but I do know that I want to see this 48 frame per second thing, this hyper-realistic thing. It puts Blu-ray to shame.
So does this, like, throw off your equilibrium or something like that?
Totally.
It does?
Totally.
Oh.
Totally. People are... They say that after half an hour or so, you adjust. But in the first half hour on a good screen.
Oh.
So you go IMAX 3D, 48 frames per second, you've got that sinking feeling. And people have actually, you know, walked out.
Right.
Or run out of the theater projecting this movie in New Zealand, feeling queasy and sick.
Wow.
So that was my bag reference much earlier. But here, let me finish my entreaty and then go back to answering the question you asked so long ago. The entreaty is, before you go see the movie, read the book.
I disagree. The reason I disagree is I never read the book or reread the book before I see the movie, because the book is always going to be better than the movie.
Yes.
And as a result, this is for me. I'm not saying
you just
everybody.
Want to judge the cinema as cinema.
Yes. In other words, I will, if I read the book first, and then I see the inferior movie version, and that includes, I don't care whether it's Watchmen, Tolkien, or you know, John Carter.
Excuse me, spit take. Watchmen?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. If I had watched,
I like John Carter.
If I had reread the Watchmen before seeing that movie, I would have hated it even more. My point is that since the movie version is never going to be as good as the original version, I want to see the movie fresh, and then read the original. This way, I will appreciate the movie better, and the book will be even better than that because I'm reading a superior version second. And that's for me. I did that with the Harry Potter movies and everything else.
That's a totally legitimate point, and point taken, and people can make up their own mind. Now, let me explain my thinking. I grew up with these books. I read Lord of the Rings, I don't know how many times, even before 1973 when we did the Council of Elrond here. And The Hobbit a number of times as well. And the images of these people were mine. Not that the casting in Lord of the Rings wasn't brilliant. It was.
Yeah.
It really was. Ian McKellen was great, but Ian McKellen did not, my Gandalf, in my mind's eye, looked different. My Frodo was not Elijah Wood. My Samwise was not Sean Astin. I wanted those images that were in my mind's eye to gel and be embedded so that by the time I went, then I, you know, it wasn't a question of which was going to be better. It was going to be, I have lived with this for years. I have loved this for years. So let me modify what I was going to say, or what I did say. If you have read The Hobbit and haven't read it for years, reread it before seeing the movie. If you have not read The Hobbit, see the movie first. That way, you get the best of what you were talking about,
right,
Ken. But what I'm talking about is to remember your mind's eye. Because once you see a movie, the movie images are going to supplant the images in your brain. My image of Rivendell, which already was in Lord of the Rings and will be featured in a big way again in The Hobbit, is from Tolkien's illustrations, which are unlike, or Tim Kirk's illustrations, which are unlike anything Peter Jackson has done. He's using Alan Lee's illustrations. Alan Lee's illustrations are great. They're wonderful. I chose a different artist.
Mm.
So, Reggie, what's your philosophy of seeing movies
We're
and
both
reading
right.
books?
You both have both valid points on doing it.
I'm not asking you which point is better, because
no,
I'm asking you what you do.
King Gale, let me finish, please. but what I do is that I tend to look at the movie and regardless if it is bad or good, because like you said, and I agree 100%, that the book will be infinitely better than whatever the movie adaptation is going to be. And I just watch the film for what it is and just take it for what it is. And if the movie, and if it's a bad adaptation, then I have something to look forward to.
I'm concerned that if it's sometimes with certain films,
right,
if it's a really bad adaptation,
right,
then people won't want to read the Alan
right.
Moore.
Well, see, the thing is that I knew, with Alan Moore, The Watchmen, I thought that the book was, the graphic novel was just brilliant.
I'll stand on a limb. I think the Watchmen graphic novel is the best that our industry has ever produced.
Well, they really defined, it was one of the few things that actually defined graphic novel. I think so. I mean, if you feel, because you're the comic book person here.
I'm passing Ken a picture of Rivendell.
Right. But you're the graphic, you're the comic book person in this group. I mean, since you have a show that's been in hiatus, which hopefully...
For 14 years?
Which hopefully will come back on the air real soon. Maybe as a special.
It depends on what date you want to use, because as a weekly show, it ended in 2002.
Right.
But I kept doing it thanks to people like you and Susan and a few others until 2007. Oh,
and Victor Bruiser. Right? And Vic
No, that was Fred Keane's...
Vic alternated with Susan Brown. And I was subbing for Susan Brown a lot and brought enough said
back. I thought sometimes you was filling in for Victor Bruiser as well.
I don't think so.
No? All right. No, I'm wrong with that. I remember Susan Brown.
I've been having a fight with Ken for about 20 years. Is that here he does a psychological show, here he does this comic book show, here he does this music show.
Right.
I say you shouldn't be doing any of them. I think he should be doing freeform radio and does what the muse tells him to do.
Right.
That's what I think. But what do I know? He doesn't agree, so...
No. Jim, I came around to that way of thinking about 2 years ago.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Or maybe 3 years ago, yeah.
I was just pestering you. I didn't realize you had finally seen the
light. Oh, no, I absolutely agree with you. And I would love to do a mixture of Ecologic and Nuff Said and stuff with People's Voice Cafe.
And voices from the Voices of the Id?
Yeah, I mean, I would like to do exactly what Jim said and mix up.
Wow.
And I would still do as many Ecologics and Nuff Said.
Absolutely. Of course you would.
But,
yeah.
It would be...
And it would be the audience for the interests of Ken Gayle, not just...
This is
just
the first I've ever said this on the air. I've never...
Not just pigeonholing. This is one of your things. Cool. Yes, that's my next assignment.
I know. You showed that to me before.
I know. And I still love it. I've had this now for several months, and I still love it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Inexpensive, no monthly fee. Anyway.
Yeah.
917-580-6021.
That's the number.
That's the number here. How do I feel about the movie?
I think we should say that number slowly. It's a brand new number.
It is a brand new number.
And the old number you could say quickly because you're just refreshing people's memories.
So
this one, it's brand new information.
Yeah, right. 917-580-6021. I'm trying to find the rhythm to this number. Because I remember the 212 number and the one at over at what was the one at 505?
279.
Yeah. 300-400. I'm not going to say the number at the church because it's actually in use today.
Oh no, the 279-3400. I know who has that number. A friend of mine ended up working for the business that ended up getting our number.
Oh my god! Oh yeah, you told me that once. Yeah. But
actually, I guess 917-580-6021. Does that have a rhythm to it?
No.
Actually, 580-6021 isn't bad as long as you say 6D and not 16. They got to be careful with those zeros.
That's true.
So how about 580-6021? 580.
Then you ruin the rhythm of the 8060.
Yeah. 8060 is sort of cool. But the problem is that then people hear 16.
No, you're right. You're right.
60.
I sit corrected.
60.
Yeah. 917-580-6021. You know what? I think people at home should try that out.
They should try that out.
And pledge while you're at it.
Yeah, really.
Pledge to that listener sponsor, WBAI.
Yeah.
Because where else would you hear stuff like you're hearing?
Well,
it is, as one friend said once, George Alec Effinger, it is a unique. And if you don't know George Alec Effinger as a writer of great speculative fiction, he wrote for Marvel.
For a little while.
That's right, yeah.
In the 70s.
That's right, yeah. He wrote War of the Worlds and some strange stuff.
And there are several people who were relatively unknown science fiction writers at the time who have become bigger now.
Yeah, and some known ones. Harlan Ellison was writing at that point.
He wrote for both DC and Marvel.
Yeah.
Mostly Marvel.
Fred Pohl.
Wait, Harlan Ellison wrote for DC?
I never knew that.
He was sort of credited as co-writer, as really co-plotter of a Batman issue, and popped up in a few.
Harlan's always plotting.
Yeah,
even today.
But he's dealing with Dark Horse right now, right?
I think he's adapting.
Oh, is he? Oh,
I'm not sure.
Okay.
He's got, you know, he's on his bed and he's doing deals up the wazoo. And I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah, I
had him on the air 3 months ago.
I'm not at liberty to talk about his Marvel deal, but it's real interesting.
Okay. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Well,
yeah. A friend of mine with the initial CC doesn't want to know from that company. He has not read a comic book, he says, in a year and a half. I won't divulge his name.
I can't
the
say
the man
that
who
blame
wrote
him.
X-Men for 30 years. Okay. I will not divulge his name.
Okay.
No, he's such an unknown.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I know what you're talking about. I have no idea.
He's been on.
I know. I remember you introduced me to him.
Oh, okay. That's
right. You introduced me to him.
Yeah, nice man.
No, yeah.
Should be here soon.
Really?
Yes. Yes. Actually, would have been here by now if it wasn't for Hurricane Sandy. And wasn't for Hurricane Sandy, we wouldn't be pitching now.
Yeah, really?
If it wasn't for Hurricane Sandy and pitching now, we wouldn't be getting ready to be bringing you The Council of Elrond.
The Council of Elrond.
Being book two, volume... Book chapter two, book two, volume one.
Nice.
Of the Lord of the Rings.
This is what I like about WBAI, where all these things can coexist and mesh and intermingle with each other.
They can. Cool. And don't think, by the way, listeners to Robert Knight and other wonderful shows, that this isn't political. Lord of the Rings is way political. The Hobbit is a children's book,
right.
Okay? And he wrote it that way. And just to finish what you asked me half an hour ago, I have very mixed feelings. I think that Peter Jackson should have made The Hobbit 10 years ago.
Mm.
He finished Lord of the Rings 11 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then what does he do? He goes out and he's, how do you top Lord of the Rings? King Kong? Really now? And then The Lovely Bones? Why? Why?
I have personal issues with King Kong.
Yeah,
I had issues.
Whether you liked it or not, my point is he did as decent a job with Lord of the Rings as could be done.
Okay.
Ralph Bakshi.
Right.
And because remember, it was the second version of the film.
Right.
Actually, in a way, it's the third, but there was the Howard Hawks version, but we won't go there.
Right.
He waited for Ian McKellen to age another 12 years to write a story that takes place 100 years earlier.
Right.
You know? And then he's bringing in all of these other characters, Galadriel, the semi-immortal, who isn't in The Hobbit. There are all these characters who aren't in The Hobbit at all, who are in this movie.
Right.
And all that aside, adaptation issues aside, and purist issues aside, two things. He's making The Hobbit, which is about two-thirds of the length of the shortest book of Lord of the Rings, into a movie that is almost as long as the entire Lord of the Rings in three parts. There's one word for that: bloat.
I don't know. I haven't seen it, so I have no idea whether he's padding or not, but movies don't have enough room to adapt novels. All right, a two-hour, three-hour movie, there's not enough room to adapt a novel.
Understood.
So when you said it was three parts, I was sitting here going, oh,
we're
that's
talking
nice.
8 hours.
Yeah, he's got enough time to adapt an entire novel.
I like serials. I like long stories. I like, you know, the best version of Pride and Prejudice is the six-hour version, you know, that they did in 1995 on the BBC. Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell by Susanna Clarke will be coming out this year from the BBC, 6 hours long, no commercials, thank you. And that's a 900-page novel. That's skimping. The Hobbit is light stuff. And to... because Legolas was so popular with a lot of the young ladies in Lord of the Rings, they're finding a way to put him in here. They're cramming in characters that don't belong, and he's not fleshing out the story. He's, in fact, adding characters that never existed. He's doing stories that are in the appendices and all that. And the movie has opened in New Zealand. I've read several of the reviews, most of which, by the way, were inadequate to the task. You can just tell by reading a review.
Yeah, I almost when they never don't read get reviews.
It. Yeah,
I try to go into every movie knowing nothing about it. Other than what's on the poster, I'll look at who did the music, especially who did the writing, but I don't want to know what they did.
I try to
ignore merchandising, and you go to a convention and try to ignore merchandising of a hot science fiction or comics movie. It's really difficult. I'll walk through the aisles and try to walk quickly so that everything in my peripheral vision is a blur because I don't want to know anything because I find I get prejudiced about it.
Yeah.
And I have seen movies with friends who did see the trailers and read the reviews, and they go into the movie thinking certain things of what they're going to see. And so many trailers are misleading.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And why they go out of their way to mislead you.
I've not watched the trailers for this movie, except I've looked at some of the stills, and I will say again, the casting is brilliant. I love Martin Freeman. I think he's a wonderful actor. Have you watched at all Sherlock,
the TV show?
Yes, the TV series from the same people that put out Doctor Who, with Benedict Cumberbatch as Sherlock and Martin Freeman as Watson. Martin Freeman is also the star of the TV series The Office, the British version, not the American version. He was also Arthur Dent in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Hmm.
He's a really wonderful, versatile, good actor. And the casting of him as Bilbo, as the young Bilbo, because, of course, Ian Holm will be on hand as the old Bilbo. And how can you do that if he's already passed through the Western lands? But, well, it's a problem. The casting, again, sounds brilliant. I loved many aspects of Lord of the Rings, and I despised some of the things that were missing. Because what was missing from Lord of the Rings was the culture. Where was the language? Where were the fact that they say, oh no, the swords are made differently by the orcs as they're made by the dwarves. That's not the culture. Where were the songs? Where were the maps? All of the wealth of the richness of the imagination, the philology that Tolkien put into Lord of the Rings is is largely missing. And most important, yes, Ken.
No, I think what else is missing is the preparations that the characters made.
Yes.
You have all these different sides of a war.
Uh-huh.
And they prepared for each other because they were all worthy adversaries. In a lot of movies and books and comics, you have two sides of something.
Mm-hmm.
And one side is not a worthy adversary for the other. And the whole storyline suffers
as a
result.
And you've got about five sides in Lord of the Rings.
And
in The Hobbit, it's the Battle of the Five Armies.
And they all worry about the other sides because they're all worthy adversaries.
Mm-hmm.
And in the movie, Lord of the Rings, you guys battle, 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 battle. And I went to see it with a friend of mine who had not read the books and came out of there never wanting to touch the books because she felt like it's such a violent movie. All they do is fight. Okay, that's not what the book is about.
Although Tom Clancy did once call Lord of the Rings the best war novel ever written. And that may be true, but that's because it gets into the characters. Yeah. It gets into the reasons and what's at risk and what people are thinking. And very few people ever see themselves as the bad guys. Saruman, not even Saruman, sees himself as the bad guy. The only one, and we never get into its head, is Sauron.
Yeah.
And that's it. So I totally agree with everything that you're saying. But also, there were two things that were missing from Lord of the Rings that I find unforgivable. One of them is beside the point, and that's just my problem. And that's my favorite character in Lord of the Rings, Tom Bombadil.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Tom Bombadil, who should get his own movie. And
maybe he will.
Maybe he's in The Hobbit. It's not out of the question. He's the first man. He's the first human. So he could very well turn up in this. And Goldberry, of course, his wife or partner, whatever she is. Just wonderful characters. And yes, maybe he will. Maybe somebody, Del Toro, maybe Guillermo del Toro will do the Tom Bombadil story. He could do worse.
Well, that would be interesting.
Wouldn't it? Wouldn't it? He would do a great job
very
with that. But that's you know, okay, yes, you have to cut somewhere. What they shouldn't have cut and what they didn't cut is Tolkien's entire denouement, his entire purpose for writing Lord of the Rings. And that can be said in two words: Sharky's End. Sharky's End, for the people who don't know, is basically after Frodo and Samwise, I think Merry and Pippin have gone their own ways, but Frodo and Samwise go back to Hobbiton and they discover, now in the movie, we see Saruman die a horrible, horrible death, as does Wormwood, his nasty little companion. No, they don't die in the book. In fact, what has happened is they have in the absence of everything, they disappear somewhere in the middle of the second volume of the trilogy in the Two Towers, and they have taken over Hobbiton, and they have turned it into an industrial wasteland. Lord of the Rings is a plea.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go after you directly now. It's a plea for anti-industrial or smart industrial use of ecological resources. And that is much... Now, Tolkien was just a xenophobe. He was afraid of, you know, the unknown, and Hobbiton represents everything that's warm and fuzzy and nice. And here it is.
They were the English.
Yes, right. And exactly, in their little cottages.
Yeah.
And here come the most evil creatures this side of Sauron. And somebody's texting me, probably got something wrong. And this side of Sauron, and they have taken over. And that is the... by the way, they don't even get killed then. They are shamed out of Hobbiton by our young hobbits who are now warriors. So that is largely the point, the anticlimax of the book, which is a long anticlimax.
Indeed.
Is very important in terms of hobbits. Of what Tolkien was trying to say. I'm sorry, I can't read my... I am being texted. I have to put on my glasses.
The first time I read The Scouring of the Shire, I thought it was like, hey, it's over. What's going on here? And then the next time I read it, I really appreciated that aspect of the book so much more, because in so many works of fiction, you know, when the battle's over, everything's gone, and it's the end. And of course, life does go on, and there are prices to pay.
I am told all four hobbits go back to Hobbiton.
They separate.
Are you sure, secret texter, that Pippin doesn't stay with whoever takes over from King Theobald and marry somewhere else? Or she's got it's Barbara. She's got the book at hand.
Well, yeah, if you have the book at hand, then, you know, that's the source. But at any rate...
Also, she's got a good memory.
If you think about Tolkien is writing this during World War II, and he's working, you know, for the military.
She says, yep.
And England, especially after... I mean, well, I guess politically, the U.S. is still going through the hell of post-World War II.
Oh, then she says, pretty sure.
But the point is that in England, rationing, for example, went on until the mid-50s. And so the circumstances that surrounded World War II continued. So, of course, when a war is over, that's not like everything goes back to the way it was before the war started.
Yeah.
That's not what happens. And that's not what happened in Lord of the Rings. And I it was a brilliant analysis of what civilizations go through.
Speaking of civilization, guys, for those people
back to reality.
Back to reality. For those people who are walking and enjoying this thing, either by listening on your old-fashioned radio device there or your new fancy-fangled smartphone, we need volunteers. Even at this time, because we have absolutely no one in the back.
Oh, my
right
God.
Now.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we have
and
no
we're
one
about to take a 90-minute break to listen to the right. Council of Elrond. And when we come back...
I will go back and take any calls that come on.
What's coming on?
Give me 60 seconds. I'll be back to answer your calls.
Lister is scheduled to come on.
Yeah, okay.
He's scheduled to come on. Yeah. Well, hey, this will be a
but
great
if you would like, but yeah, if you want to come to WBAI and God forbid meet me and stuff like that, just call 917-580-6021 and ask for Ken.
Ken is handling tally board right now.
No, you said nobody else is there.
Yeah, he's nobody. Well, he's going to be the person that is exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm going to have to start.
Yes, you do.
The reading in like 11 minutes, because it is 90 minutes long. Yeah, and that means that to finish it before 3, we got to start it at 1:20.
Okay, so there's not going to be any back pitching?
Well, that if we start it in 10 minutes, then I get 10 minutes of back pitching.
I see.
But that's getting close to 3 a.m. Okay. So the point is actually we need front pitching.
Right.
We need to pitch now. We need
pitch
to raise
now.
Money now. We need to
right
drive
now.
Ken crazy.
Right.
Because he's the only one there answering
he
phones.
He is the only one
and,
in there.
And he is so good. He is so faithful. What we need to do is we need to make Ken work for the salary we don't pay him.
Oh, right.
917-580-6021. 580-6021. Area code 917 is the number to call. Please call that number now. Make a pledge to WBAI. Recognize. Oh, and by the way, there is a... if people don't pledge at all, there is a break point.
Oh, a break point.
Yes, there is a point. Uh-oh. I know this thing pretty much by heart. And there is a point where Gandalf says something, and then